Hello and welcome into this episode of You Seem Interesting. I'm Danny Rouillet, the host of this thing. Thank you. Thank you for finding us. Thank you for checking us out. However you're doing it, it's cool, man. We are grateful that we are a teeny tiny part of your life in some way. You're listening to us on a jog, walking the dog. I didn't mean for that to rhyme. Riding your bicycle, sitting around the fireplace on your Alexa speaker with your pal, drinking some adult beverages. I don't know your life, but I do know that I'm grateful that you let us be a teeny tiny part of it, whether it's Amazon Music, Google Pods, Spotify, Apple Pods, all of that stuff. It is cool. You want to find us for free. That's where you do it, man. Really, really appreciate it. Just search You Seem Interesting. And if you're a paying subscriber on Patreon, dude, thank you. That is awesome. You guys want to help out, support the show, patreon.com/funnydanny. That's the lifeblood that kind of keeps this thing going, lets us do the things that we all seem to mildly tolerate. So it is really, really neat. My guest this week is a guy named Mike Gilman, who is the founder, CEO at The Grooming Lounge, a business here in the DC area that I am a patron of. And I love these guys. They're awesome, awesome, awesome. They, like so many other businesses, had to pivot during the pandemic, obviously, especially somebody in that service sector or that experiences sector, which The Grooming Lounge is. They have a wonderful online store, and they also have a couple of locations where you go in and men get really pampered, and it's awesome. I love The Grooming Lounge. I'm a huge fan. Wanted to have Mike on for a while, so I'm fortunate enough to do that here this week. Got a couple bits of information I want to give you guys here in a moment, but we always do this around this time. It's the strangest gimmick in all the podcasting.
It is once again time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting. Moderately passable celebrity impression asking you for money.
A wizard is never late. He arrives precisely when he means to. And when he's there, he goes to patreon.com/funnydanny. That's where you contribute. Don't you see, Frodo?
I don't know why Gandalf had to yell at Frodo there at the end, but that's kind of where we are. Thank you again for checking us out. Mike Gilman will be on here in a few moments. I want to give you guys some numbers. So this is anecdotal, but you know what I'm talking about. And I cringe when I think about this. And I want to bring this up to Mike here when I speak to him in a few moments. But there used to be this stigma around men that took care of themselves. Right? What was supposed to happen to men, I suppose, according to our kind of our old paradigms, was, yep, you're just going to get older, fatter, bags under your eyes, lose your hair. Who cares if you don't look good? You're a man. Be a man about it. And that was kind of the deal, right? And anybody that did something, whether it was, hey, maybe this puffiness under my eyes doesn't have to be, or maybe I should get a nice haircut, or maybe, I don't know, I could wear some clothes that fit me well, or whatever it is, any kind of stylistic upgrade, sartorial upgrade, or, you know, appearance upgrade for men, was met with derision, condescension, and otherwise. You could think back to it, and you know the terms, and it just makes me cringe so badly thinking that I did that. You just kind of, you just busting people's chops. But I had a very good friend who turned me on to The Grooming Lounge, actually. And he was a patron early on of this stuff, or kind of an early adopter. And he's spending, you know, it's not like a time where we had a ton of money, but he's spending, you know, $38 on a little tube of like Kiehl's facial cream and, you know, $80 on some tea tree shampoo. And we called him all sorts of names. Again, that would make me cringe now thinking about it. But we've evolved in a lot of way. And this is a market space that I find A, fascinating, but B, has changed. I mean, changed in a major, major way. Check some of these numbers out. The market for men's grooming products. So that's all thing men's grooming. Everything from combs to teeth whiteners to skincare, whatever, right? This is the most recent data I could find is as of 2017. The global marketplace for men's grooming products, $57.7 billion. That figure, according to analysts, experts, and folks that do this for a living, is expected to double by 2023. Again, I say that one more time. That figure is expected to double by 2023. There's a valuation now within the next couple of years of, you know, north of $80 billion, and we're headed there in a major way. And this wasn't the case a handful of years ago. It's a major growth opportunity, somehow selling men on the ability and, you know, hey, it's okay. You're worth it. It's okay to take care of yourself. I think that's a slogan for somebody somewhere, by the way, the whole you're worth it thing. On those who regularly invest in their appearance, American women spend an average of around $4,000 per year on beauty and fitness costs. Everything from gym memberships to hair care products, skincare, otherwise things from getting your eyebrows threaded to, I don't know, just again, kind of the right products at home to smell nice and have your skin glow and all those other kind of things. By contrast, men are only spending around $3,000 per year. So over the course of a lifetime, women spend, again, this is on average in America, around $230,000 in their lifetime. Men spend around $175,000 in their lifetime. So it's when, you know, the gap's kind of small, but then it expands. So for men, again, it includes gym memberships. It includes, you know, sort of that stuff, that any kind of way that you're taking care of yourself, any self-care that relates to appearance. $350 a year specifically on beauty from women. Men, again, significantly less. And right now, just another interesting number, men spend around $600 a year on the kind of the subcategory of hygiene, right? Everything from deodorant to your fancy soaps and your skincare routine, et cetera, which is less than half of what women typically spend. And there are a lot of women that spend way in excess of that. But I talked to Dr. Terrence Keeney about this not too long ago on a previous episode, and we talked about this a little bit. Men are getting better. It's not good yet, but we're getting better at taking care of ourselves. That can include a lot of things, by the way. Anything from the mental health element of things, and maybe admitting, hey, maybe I'm not quite strong enough just to handle this with, you know, with silence or otherwise. Or it's, you know, dressing well, or, you know, doing things that are flattering, and doing things that take care of yourself, whether it's going to the gym, exercise, in a million different ways. Men are really kind of having an awakening here when it comes to that. It's just different, and it is evolving. And this is a space where Mike Gilman of the Grooming Lounge saw an opportunity, and he's been really successful. Now, pandemic hits, everything changes. We'll talk to him about that as well. But really enjoy this conversation with Mike Gilman, the founder, executive director of handsomeness at the Grooming Lounge. Enjoy the comment. Get more handsome. My guest this week is the founder and CEO. Full disclosure, it's a company that I love. I was a skeptic at one point. No longer. I am all in. Mr. Mike Gilman, CEO, founder of The Grooming Lounge, is my guest. Mike, thanks for joining me, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Danny. Thanks for having me.
So rewind 21 plus years ago.
Yep.
Say to yourself, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go into this space where men are actually going to better themselves, where men are going to look more handsome, where they actually are going to pay more than the $5 to get a nice haircut, a shave, products, etc. Did you feel nervous? How scared were you to kind of go into this space that really wasn't occupied by many folks when it came to men?
You know, I don't think I was scared, just because I think when you're young, 20 years ago, you don't really know. So I thought it was great. I didn't really have much to lose, and I just knew that there was a market for this stuff. So I was confident and stupid, and the combination, or maybe a little unaware. And I think the combination of that didn't make it that nerve-wracking. It was nerve-wracking other than kind of some of the money we had to put up for retail space, but otherwise, I wasn't too nervous.
Obviously, we'll get to COVID stuff that challenged you guys, everybody, anyone in a service industry or otherwise. And that's an extreme sort of test case here. But early on, as you guys are kind of getting established, what were your biggest obstacles to change, frankly, idiots like me in my mind and about what was worth it in terms of these experiences? And again, the stuff that it wasn't just the $1.99 you'd spend at a CVS. No, no, no. Your face is worth it. Your appearance, et cetera. What were the big hurdles for you?
Yeah, well, the reason that the way that I came up with the idea for the business, kind of long story short, is that my parents had worked in the beauty industry. They were distributors for salon hair care brands. And my grandfather started a business like 90 years ago. And so they distributed salons. So while I didn't work there, I was familiar with the business. And I used to come home from college or after college, and I would go to like these hair shows that they would have. And I would always grab stuff, you know, hair products, bath gels, eye gels, all this stuff. And I would see my friends from home, and I would just bring like a big bag and say, like, you guys want any of this stuff? And a couple weeks after I did that, my friend who I would consider like the biggest slob, who never puts on a collared shirt, any of that stuff, called me and he was like, hey, Gilman, do you have any more of that bath gel? I love that stuff. And literally a light bulb went off, and I was like, if this guy or these guys are into this stuff, I can't imagine what a lawyer or a lobbyist or a politician or somebody downtown who's like a real professional would be into. And that kind of just snowballed into the idea of offer them the products they need and provide services that they want to get in a really nice setting, or maybe some that they don't even know that they want, like you're talking about, you know, facials and more intense grooming stuff.
What did you set out to do initially, and then how did that morph over the first handful of years?
Well, initially it was going to be just a website. We just wanted to create a website. And this was like at the beginning of the dot-com boom. we wanted to create a website where guys could sit in their underwear and their t-shirt at home and order stuff they'd be too embarrassed to get in a store. So we sold, you know, like waxing kits for those guys who wanted to wax their eyebrows or their back. We sold like gels for under your eye for guys who wanted to kind of hide a hangover and stuff for thinning hair. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to blow up this huge website. And this was before Amazon really existed in any form. So, you know, obviously that's what we wanted to do. We haven't quite gotten there yet, but that's what we wanted to do initially.
So then you morph, you got brick and mortar locations and had, walk me through that.
Yeah. So after we did that for a little bit, we always had the idea of creating a brick and mortar store where guys could go. I remember getting a manicure before I got married. Before we got married, my wife was like, "Your nails are disgusting." And I remember how uncomfortable I felt. I went to like a women's salon or a nail place and I felt really uncomfortable. And I was like, yeah, but I bet you, you know, if I did this in a place where I felt comfortable and there was a TV and I could have a beer or something, I wouldn't feel that uncomfortable. And I bet there's more guys like me. You know, we dovetailed off the website, knew that there was a market for it, and then went out searching for high-end real estate in DC, kind of in the center of where all the lawyers and lobbyists and everybody is, to try to plant our flag as a retail store.
And you did it. You guys have been there for how many years now? 15, 16 years in that spot? 20 years?
March of 2002.
Wow.
And it was, you know, we were the only guys doing it. It was like we had, you know, discovered the television, you know, or created the first television, and that it was, you know, it was easy. It was easy because no one else was doing it. The market is gotten considerably more crowded since then.
So I had a guest on previously, a guy I went to high school with and grew up with, a guy named Dr. Terrence Keeney, who is a dermatologist by trade. And one of the themes and things that we talked about are just from a health perspective, but I think it applies here as well, Mike. Men are worse at this. We're just not as good at taking care of ourselves, whether it's, you know, the ghosts of the strong, silent type from the John Wayne Westerns in the 50s where you never complain and or you never admit to any kind of weakness or the need to take care of yourself when it comes to a health perspective. But I think that translated for a long time for men when it came to grooming. And again, that kind of idea of self-care, that's changed, I feel like. When do you think it did? Or A, do you believe that it's changed? But B, when do you think that sea change began?
Oh, yeah, it's huge. That's absolutely right. I think, you know, when we started and then companies like us started, the ball started rolling a little bit. The only grooming stuff out when we started was like GQ might have a page like, here are the grooming products you need, or Men's Health or something like that. And then we started, a couple other companies started, and as much as I hate like the term, I think when there was like that show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, the first rendition of it.
Yes.
They started talking. I can't even think of what the word. Oh, metrosexual.
I'm going to bring that up. Yes.
Yeah. So I think that word's horrible. And I think it's kind of stigmatizes guys taking care of themselves. But that really kind of in terms of media and stuff really opened up the door for guys to start talking about it. And we were on the other side just saying, it's not about being a metrosexual. It's just a guy who wants to look and feel good.
So I remember, and you bring that word up, as a teenager and into my early 20s, you use that term. I now cringe at the idea that if somebody combs their hair and uses aftershave, it somehow diminishes them or makes them homosexual or something like that. It's just ridiculous. That's what we did. But, you know, we were dumb teenagers and you just sort of were busting your buddy's chops. That word, I think, was part of whatever the stigma was. And I'd love for you to talk about fighting against that. Again, just a sort of, no, this isn't just for the super fabulous television personality that you know, is effeminate. This is for your rank and file, kind of like that slob you're talking about that never wore a collar shirt.
Yep.
I'd love for you to kind of go into that.
Yeah. So I think kind of like the metrosexual and that whole thing, all the taboos that stood in the way was actually an advantage for us because we were able to say, and kind of make fun of guys, which is a good thing in terms of grooming, because if they can laugh about it and admit like, hey, they want to do it, it makes it a little easier. So we kind of said, listen, you know that your hair is thinning. You know that you have a unibrow. You know that, you know, you're working, you got armpit stains. Like everybody knows it. Just be okay with it. We've got solutions for you to help take care of that. So I think like that metrosexual kind of all those taboo things, it was good because we offered an alternative and a place and a way for guys to feel comfortable doing that stuff in a way that didn't kind of strike a blow to their masculinity, because we'd say, hey, come get us. We're laughing about it. We know it's hilarious that you're putting on face cream at night. We know that, you know, the fact that you want to get your feet rubbed or your toenails clipped. If you can have a beer and be watching SportsCenter or CNN while you're doing it, it takes the edge off a little. And, you know, gradually it just snowballed and guys became more and more okay with it. And, you know, now it's at a point where it seems pretty much mainstream for guys to take care of themselves.
No, it is. And again, my own personal paradigms have changed. I did what my dad did when it came to shaving, for example. I took this electric set of clippers, didn't know how to clean them or maintain them, some, you know, $9.99 Norelco thing. And I just, you know, whenever I did it, I'd go, here we go, and just cut my neck up and get, you know, ingrown hairs and constant pain, which is the thing. It sucked. And I just go, well, that's what being a man is. You grow up and it sucks. If you want to not have a beard or you're required to shave, it's just going to be miserable and sort of that's that. I just didn't know. And now I've got this army of Grooming Lounge products. I only shave in the shower. I am Lord Fauntleroy. I'm just a little dandy. I'm in there putting up the tiny bottle pre-shave on. I've got the brush from my neck, the whisker sauce for afterwards, everything under the sun.
That's awesome.
And you know, the safe razor. But the point is, I didn't know what was out there. How much of this, forget about a stigma, how much of this was ignorance where guys, again, didn't know? Because I put myself in those shoes. I just didn't know there was a better way.
Absolutely. That's the whole thing. I mean, one of the things we tried to do, and a lot of companies have tried to do, is that, you know, you can sell people products, but you have to tell guys how to use it and how it benefits them. So, you know, being a guy and knowing that you can make fun of guys, you know, when it comes to grooming, guys were idiots. Not only were they idiots, but they also, you know, had this macho or machismo about them, or like, oh, I don't need to use that shit. But once you get it to them, just like my friend with the shower gel, they say, holy cow, I can't believe, like, this stuff is great. You know, I'm kind of the same way. I've never been super into grooming, and still I'm not that much, although I use good products, but it's kind of fun, like, to take care of yourself. Like, if I have a brand new shower gel to pop open, or giving myself a shave using the right products, it's kind of enjoyable, and it's kind of a little bit of brainless downtime. It's almost like meditation to be able to use this stuff and do your morning routine where you're just by yourself. So, a lot of it is enlightening guys, stuff they have no idea they need, but then when they use it, they realize that it provides real results and makes them feel better.
And as I've gotten older, I now am far more willing, maybe, than I would have been. And I'm sure a lot of it's not as if I'm rich, but before, when you're student loans and you could barely make rent every month and you're working a terrible job, it just you don't feel like you could spend on anything other than Miller Lite. But now that I've kind of gotten a little bit older, I am way more willing to pay for experiences. And again, that's what I think of when I talk about Grooming Lounge, where it's like, I want to lay back in that chair, get my Godfather style shave, the nice haircut, scalp massage, head wash, the whole nine yards. It's just, it's so relaxing and it's so awesome. Is that a kind of an inroad that you're able to make with guys, again, where you're kind of going, here are the products, stuff you can do at home and it feels good. The experience is here. And selling that experience, I imagine, would be something you got to try it once, then you'll know.
Absolutely. And that's what we've tried to do from day one. And I think successful companies, whether it's a restaurant or, you know, a men's grooming company or retailer, you can get a haircut anywhere. You could get, a men's facial, or you can buy products anywhere. It's an experience. And especially for guys, because guys have traditionally, I think, they will spend money on themselves, but guys, whereas women have splurged on beauty stuff and stuff to provide self-care for themselves, guys haven't done it. So, you know, it's okay to charge a premium for something if you're giving that experience. And what we try to do is not only you get a great haircut or whatever else it is, but you get a lot of bells and whistles with it. You know, whether it's a beer when you come in, a scalp massage, a neck and shoulder massage at the end, a hot towel, all that kind of stuff creates a great experience. And we have tried to treat guys like big shots. You want to feel like a big shot and walk out with more confidence than when you came in. And all that stuff's essential. I think it's just as essential as getting the great service. You have to provide an awesome experience, because especially now, there's just so many choices and options out there. So our experience, or anyone's experience, has to be better than the competition to succeed.
All right, let's get into it. This past year sucked for everybody. I mean, it just did. Yeah. I can't imagine the pivot that are required for you guys, the challenges for you guys. Again, we're talking about these experiences in person. No one was doing anything in person over the last year plus. The pivot, what you guys did, how you handled it. Again, I just cannot imagine facing that kind of a challenge. I mean, it's not unique, because everybody did. I mean, I was at home oh, my kids can't stand me. My wife's mad at me every second of every day. We walk in every day like a 9 out of 10 in terms of our anger and our frustration. And then here you are with your business. I'd love you to just to speak to that.
Well, backing up, I still like Miller Lite, and I'm old now.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a disaster. Yeah. I mean, it's been horrible for everyone. And, you know, I think I actually feel lucky. We're better off than a lot of people. But, you know, we went into the pandemic with this fantastic business. We had had this flagship store in D.C. We have one in Tyson's Corner, Virginia. And they're both just, you know, they're machines. They're humming along, and our website is crushing it. And just one day it totally stops, and we close both our stores for 3+ months. And you've got 45 plus team members that, you know, kind of are like family, and they don't have income, you don't have any income, and you're worried about how you're going to pay bills and pay the rent and all that kind of stuff. So it was bad. We pivoted to focus as much online as we could. And eventually we've determined, you know, our store in DC is still not open, and I don't think we will open, just because we had this location on L Street in Connecticut, like right near the Mayflower, which was probably, for a business like ours, the best location in DC you could possibly imagine, because it's all business guys. But nobody's down there anymore. So not only would we not have any business, but we also can't get any, it would be hard to get staff to work there. So, you know, that's sad. I'm kind of over it now. You know, it's water under the bridge, but we've got our Virginia store up and it's crushing it, and our website is doing great. But it has been a struggle, and like anxiety provoking, to kind of say the least, in addition to all the other stuff going out, just kind of knowing kind of that your life's work and something that you planted a flag, you're the first to do it. And this pandemic comes and then you're screwed. Nothing you can do.
How do you find talent? I'm always amazed at that. Because as you said, there's a lots of places, lots of people give haircuts, and you could do that $17-$18 barber thing or whatever. Yeah. You guys have just an incredible roster of people that are amazing, regardless of what's going on in their day. When I'm, you know, old slap nuts idiot me, when I walk through the door, as you said, I'm the king. You make these regular rank and file stupid sloppy Joes feel like a king. Where do you find the talent, and how do you find them?
Well, first of all, that's so great that you say that, because I mean, that's been our goal. So the fact that you experienced that, and you're being very kind, but that's great. It's very hard. That's the hardest part of probably any kind of retailer service business, is finding good people. It's impossible to find a lot of really good people. So what we've done over the years is we get a lot of people when they're young and kind of out of hair school, and we train them up and they kind of grow their career with Grooming Lounge. And we put just as much focus on kind of that customer service or hospitality component as the technical aspect. And they just kind of grow up. And I think what we try to instill in these people, which who are still very hard to come by because they also have a lot of options now, is that you got to know where your bread is buttered. People have a lot of options. They can go a lot of places. Don't take what you do or the people come in and pay you a lot of money and give you really nice tips for granted. You have to understand that that person's the most important. And I think beyond that, what we try to do, growing up in kind of the hair and beauty industry, most salons and barbershops, there's a lot of drama. The staff behind the scenes, there's arguments about who stole whose salad dressing, and I don't want to take a guest or a new customer and all that kind of stuff. We've tried to run our business like a business. Like, the person who comes in, you got problems at home, boyfriend's a dick, girlfriend's not doing something, whatever. Leave it outside. You're here, you're on stage, you're providing something for the guest. When the day's over, we can talk about it and figure it out. But when you're here and you're on stage, you got to take care of the person sitting in your chair, because they're the person who pays the bills.
So using kind of a weak sports analogy here, Mike, so bear with me. Good NFL head coaches should expect to lose staff members. Right. Those guys folks are going to graduate. Right. Your team has a good offense. People come calling, sniffing around. They want the offensive coordinator. They want to promote him. Same thing with the defensive coordinator. What's a goal for you in that regard with your staff? Right. Like you mentioned, you grab a young up and comer, first round draft pick, so to speak, a guy or gal that's great. And you say, here's your career arc. What sort of make you the proud papa?
Yeah, well, it's, I don't know. Do you know all this stuff, or have you done like some research? Because you're kind of hitting a lot of key points of pain points and kind of our
industry.
It's
what I do. I research, baby, every week.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest challenge kind of in this industry that we're in. And I'm sure it's other service industries too, is that you get great people, you build them up, they do a great job too, and build up a roster of really loyal clientele or guests. And it's especially true in the men's business because guys are super loyal. Like, guys see somebody they like to get a haircut, they'll go for them for years. They'll follow them anywhere if they do a good job. So you keep people on. In this industry, a lot of people go, there's a lot of these like salon suites. I don't know if you're familiar with what those are. They're you know, these big buildings where there's like a landlord basically, and stylists will rent out a booth or a little business within a business. You know, they're basically a tenant. And so that happens a lot in this industry. It's tough for salon or barbershop owners because people will take their clientele that they built up over years in a salon or barbershop, and these guys follow them. So you have to go find somebody else and build up that business again. It's just kind of the natural evolution. Or people spin off and open their own thing. I mean, one thing I'm proud of, which is actually painful, but I'm proud of it, is that when we started in DC, our shop spurned like 20 other barbershops. The people who started with us when we were the only game in town have opened shops all over this area and frankly all over the country. So I was super bummed when they left, but I guess it is a compliment to us that they've gone on and done that, which is great. But like you said, keeping talent and keeping people interested and enthused and making the kind of money they want, that's probably the biggest challenge that we have.
All right, last one for you, man. I asked this of everybody. Take your time, think about it. Give me a career highlight, all-time slam dunk moment. You score a touchdown, end zone spike, taunting penalty type stuff. And I imagine I have an idea where the low might be. It probably has something to do with the last year, but take your time. Give me an, oh my God, what have I done moment.
Well, I would say the coolest thing, other than, of course, being on the show, is we did a bunch of years ago, we've always done kind of tried to do like zany PR stunts. That my background was in advertising and PR. And so about 6 years ago, we came up with a fakakta survey to find what celebrity had the best hair in America. And we awarded it to Howard Stern, knowing that he's obsessed with his hair. And we got a big trophy made, put out a press release, and I got a call the next morning from Howard's producer. Howard wants to have you on the show to present him with the trophy. So we went up to New York, gave Howard the trophy. I was on air for probably a half hour. And for 4 years after that, it, you know, as hard as it is to believe, Howard continued to win. So he won that award 4 years in a row. So I was on that show 4 years in a row, presenting Howard with his trophy. And, you know, it was fun. They had all kinds of crazy stuff going on, but you know, I've been a fan and listened to that since I was in high school. So, that was a pretty neat thing.
All right. Not off the hot seat yet. Give me the low. Give me the, oh my God, what have I done moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's with the COVID stuff, when both stores shut down and your income is cut by 80%, and you know, you have a lot of people and don't know how you're going to pay rent, much less them. So, you know, that was I'm going to barf moment, which lasted, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months, but, the light's starting to shine a little bit again.
Absolutely, my friend. Well, I love the Grooming Lounge, and I'm a fan of yours. I appreciate you spending the time with me, buddy. You're interesting as hell, Mike. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. I appreciate it.
Thank you to my guest, Mike Gilman, founder and executive director of Handsomeness at the Grooming Lounge. Loved a lot of his answers. A few things I wanted to pull out there. That was the word that I was kind of dancing around in the introduction, and he brought it up as well. That metrosexual word. And again, I can't believe that we were using that. It's now, you know, so much more, and you cringe at that sort of behavior, but that's what it was. That was sort of that stigma. And I really do think he was very salient. I think he was right on in so much as that show. I think it was Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, the one that he brought up, which sort of started to change the paradigm. Just because you have pants that fit, you know, you're not wearing baggy jeans around, doesn't mean anything. It's actually, it's good. It's flattering. It's okay for men to want to look and feel good. I think that show, and again, places like the Grooming Lounge is, no, this is a pretty legit business. It was kind of a, as long as somebody, it's almost like it maybe chicken or the egg, but you put the shop up, you put the products up, and people will come. You build it, they come. And that was sort of, I think, a key moment. I think Mike knew he was onto something. But you know, if you listen to the show at all, how fascinated I am in general with a lot of folks that say, nobody's done this before, but I'm going to go do it. And that courage to go out in on your own and start the business and go from idea to thing, I'm always fascinated by that. And I think we underrate how courageous it is a lot of times for folks to take an idea and try to make money off, to try to make that their life's work. And Mike certainly did that. And I loved his answers about that. Like, he knew he was onto something when the slob said, "Hey, do you have any more of that stuff?" That was my slob impression. But you get it. I mean, that's what was probably such the aha, eureka, light bulb moment. Not only that I was onto something, but that I was onto the right track. So I love that answer as well from Mike. And then just in terms of running this kind of a business, it's sort of, again, that double-edged sword, right? Where you want great talent. You want folks that are great at delivering this experience that sort of enhances your brand and makes, you know, folks like me swear by this place and love it so much. You're going to lose those folks. You are. I mean, that's in any walk of life, especially, but when it comes to, I think this in-person care experience kind of a business is probably that much more profound, right? I mean, you know, big major companies, hey, I lost my middle manager. I lost this employee. And you sort of, you know, hey, the beat goes on. But this is probably a major, major challenge, I think, for shops like this. And, you know, I think it's a huge compliment that folks are talented enough to be able to go do their own thing, kind of as Mike mentioned. But also, you know, the struggle is, well, now I got to find another one. And sort of that scouting, that ability. Again, I think it's a lot like sports, and Mike gave a great answer on that as well. But just thinking in general about how our thoughts and sort of philosophies on this as men have changed and evolved. It really is something that I know I can speak from my own personal experience where, I mean, maybe this is, you know, getting a little bit older. I've said this a million times. It's not as if I'm wealthy or rich or anything like that, but I certainly have more money than I did at 23 when I wasn't making anything, and anything I did make went back to paying off my student loans. The willingness to shell out for experiences that I find worthwhile. You know, I think back again to my teens and my 20s and maybe even, you know, around 30, where I'm going, I'd like to do that, but I just can't afford it. Or that's not worth it to me. I'd rather, you know, fill in the blank, do something else. And now just simple pleasures, simple acts like that, moments of serenity and peace. No kids are yelling at me. My wife hasn't pointed out anything that I've done wrong in the last, you know, 20, 30, 40 minutes, hour. I walk in and I feel like my ass don't stink. When I go into that grooming lounge, go sit down in that chair for that experience, I've got my, my glass of spring water or a beer or, a scotch or something if I'm feeling frisky on a Saturday, and I get my massage and my facial and I get the beard trim or the full-on Godfather shave, hair wash, the whole nine yards. It feels amazing. And it's one of these things where you go, why is this just for women? Why, it's not, is the answer to that, by the way. But why was this something that was only the domain of women for so long? And you know that folks like Mike, who are really smart and confident enough in this to sort of say, I'm going out on my own, or we're going to do an amazing job of this. You sell that experience, you get folks like me hooked. And that's exactly what I am. I am hooked on that experience. And what you do then is, once you have that experience in the store or in the shop, you go, how can I recreate a degree of that at home? Well, here are the products. Here's groominglounge.com. And you are now compelled. You got to get the nice stuff that makes your face feel so cool after you shave. You got to get the nice stuff that makes your scalp not itch or flake, anytime you go 20 minutes without getting your hair wet. It is absolutely part of a beautiful cycle. It makes a lot of sense to me. And I think my life has changed as a direct result of it. Not just, you know, going to the grooming lounge. I'm not saying that, you know, a nice shave and a haircut has turned things around for me, I tell you. But just in terms of what I think about, again, dressing nicely, appearance, evenings out and just sort of things like that. I remember, you know, it was t-shirt and jeans and that was it at best. You know, it was sort of like a source of pride to dress down. Now it's the opposite. I think it's a source of pride to me to look as nice as I possibly can and to dress up. Even though, who am I impressing? I'm married. I got a couple kids. They don't care about that kind of stuff. But it just, it feels a certain way. And I think, folks like the Grooming Lounge that were kind of first on the scene deserve a lot of credit for helping a lot of men sort of think that, again, that I love that one phrase that Mike used, but basically it's okay for men to want to look and feel good. So really neat. And this is sort of a bigger cultural phenomenon here than just, you know, going and getting a nice haircut. And I think Mike really stumbled on something very cool. So I really appreciate him joining me. And I thank you guys for joining us this week as well. Thanks to my producer, Andrew Russell. As always, he is the best. He had to clean up a lot of stuff because I screwed up. Have a wonderful week. I'm actually headed to the beach next week. We'll have another episode for you, and we'll do something a little bit different from down the ocean, down there at the ocean. We'll have something cool for you a couple weeks from now. But we got another regular episode next week, and we'll do something a little bit different a couple weeks now. But appreciate it. Patreon.com/FunnyDanny. You want to support the team? Otherwise, all the free cool places to get your podcast: Apple Pods, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get them. Keep getting them. Really appreciate it. Spread the word at @interest_pod on Twitter. And You Seem Interesting on the Instagrams. You can follow Danny at @FunnyDanny and @HumorousDanny on the Instagram. So really, really appreciate all of the support of the team. Again, thanks, guys. We'll be back next week. Until then, you all seem interesting.